part by
Highway 12 Winery. Sonoma wines ranging from Sauvignon Blancs and Chardonnays to local reds such as the Mission Hardware Old Sonoma Red, with a tasting room located at 27 East Napa Street, Suite S. Hours, 11 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. daily. More information, 707-938-8815 or at highway12winery.com.
The Red Grape, located at 529 First Street West, across from the Plaza in Sonoma. The Red Grape features New Haven-style pizza with thin, crispy crust high-fired in a stone-lined pizza ovens. For more information, call them at 707-996-4103. Visit their website at theredgrape.com or find them on Facebook at The Red Grape.
Unicom Tax Services, located at 755 Broadway. For more information, you can call 707-343-1898 or you can visit their website at unicomtax.com.
The Sonoma Valley Visitors Bureau, the only spot to get a regional parks pass in the valley, reminding you to support local restaurants by ordering direct and picking up your food in person. For more information, visit sonomavalley.com or call 707-996-1090.
Sebastiani Theater, located on the Sonoma Plaza. The theater offers a year-round schedule of films, live music, comedy, magic, and theatrical performances. It is also available to rent for private events with seating for up to 320 guests. More at SebastianiTheater.com.
And now back to The Morning Show.
And we're back. We're back, 9:01 on this October the 6th. I'm Marcia Meekumber, your host here for another hour, which is ever so exciting. And we've got our next guest with us this morning, who I've been very excited to talk with. Hunter Scott is Vice President of Home First. Home First's mission is every day they work to end homelessness by providing a full spectrum of services to help people find a home, improve their lives, and importantly, stay housed. Hunter, good morning, and thank you for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So tell us a little bit about Home First and what are your offerings?
Yeah, so we're a nonprofit organization that serves the unhoused community in Santa Clara, but also Sonoma County.
Mm-hmm.
Sonoma County. And as you mentioned, so our mission is to end homelessness. And so we provide a full spectrum of services to do so. So that includes prevention, street outreach, shelters, and permanent housing programs. We also offer systems leadership, which means we work with cities, counties, and local communities to improve and manage homelessness systems overall. And we've been operating a long time. This year, we're recognizing our 45th anniversary.
Holy moly. So that kind of begs the question about if, you know, is there a time when we won't need to support homelessness? Will there always be homelessness? Kind of a challenging
question. Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, I think that what we've seen in Sonoma Valley and Sonoma County is great progress towards ending homelessness. So, you know, we know that it is possible to end homelessness. It requires a multi-pronged approach that considers the various causes. So that, you know, we want to focus on kind of the two levers that we have to control, which are what we call inflow and outflow, right? So inflow is people who are becoming homeless on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And then outflow is people we're housing, right? Exiting into housing. And so if we can control those two levers, then we can shrink the overall pot of homelessness, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense, but it sounds like an incredible challenge, given what we hear about the struggles that our state legislature down to our local municipalities face in terms of trying to create more affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to adjust to the balance of supply and demand, right? Seems like just an enormous thing to manage there. Now, I'm wondering, do you partner with other nonprofits and service providers in Sonoma County that also support the unhoused? Are there partnerships in play here?
Oh, a huge amount. So that's a big part of what our role is. So I mentioned systems leadership. And so one of the things that we do is we operate the by name list for Sonoma Valley and Petaluma. And so what these are, it's a little bit what it sounds like. It's a comprehensive real-time list of everybody who's experiencing homelessness in the region. And we get these data sources from police, from frontline staffers working in the communities, from the cities themselves. And then what we do is we meet with all these providers every week and run through an action plan to end homelessness for every single person that we know who is homeless in that region. And so in Sonoma Valley, you know, that's sort of your standard offerings, right? So we've got SOS, we've got Homeless Action Sonoma, now Catholic Charities. We partner obviously with SAVES, and you know, we've got the District Rowan Supervisor's Office who attends, La Luz, right? So it's a really strong partnership of providers. And then on the countywide level, we operate what's called the coordinated entry system. And that's a system where when somebody's experiencing homelessness, they get assessed at all these different people, providers who are working with people experiencing homelessness across the county. And then we're matching them to available housing as it becomes available. And so we have brought together about 45 separate social service agencies to partner with us in this work across the county. And we also meet every week and collaboratively decide who is most in need of housing and what housing meets those needs.
Wow. That's a lot of coordination to work with 45 different agencies. So I am duly impressed. And I guess now is the time to ask, what is the state of homelessness in Sonoma County and our Sonoma Valley, if you go down that far, I don't know that granularly.
Yeah, like
and where do you see the trend going at right now?
So on the countywide level, there's a thing called the point in time count that happens every year. It's where volunteers and homeless service providers go out and literally fan out into the community on the coldest night of the year, usually the coldest night of the year. And count people who are experiencing homelessness. And then we also have other data sources that inform this. And so that provides a pretty robust picture of total homelessness across the county. And so last year, there were 1,952 people counted across the county, which represented a 23% decline from the previous year. So that's huge progress, right?
Yeah. Wow.
Couple of sub points there. So sheltered homelessness, people who are in shelter, increased by 5%, which is good out of that population. On the downside, people who are chronically homeless, so people who have been homeless for a very long time, rose by 20%, and then family homelessness rose by 37%. So overall progress is being made countywide, but there's more work to be done, and certain populations, you know, need specific attention. You mentioned Sonoma Valley. Because we operate that by names list, we have a live list of everybody who's experiencing homelessness. I can tell you today, we estimate there are 98 people currently experiencing homelessness in Sonoma Valley. And in terms of trends for Sonoma Valley, when we look at the last three quarters, we saw more people exiting homelessness than becoming homeless.
Wow.
Right? Those two levers I was mentioning earlier. And if that continues, then we can get to a point of what we call functional zero homelessness in Sonoma Valley, which is awesome.
That is fantastic news. And it's also fantastic news that it's down 23% kind of, you know, year over year right now. So that's a great step forward and a great accomplishment. So I have to ask then, what are the biggest barriers to solving the problem of homelessness?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's sort of the counterpoint to all this, right? Is that on a policy level, we see, you know, broad strokes statewide and across the country, a move towards criminalizing homelessness and really creating a negative narrative surrounding people experiencing homelessness. And we know that those policy changes just don't work. They don't actually result in addressing the problem. We know that our our criminal justice system is completely overloaded and cannot support, just jailing people who are homeless. And I don't think that our law enforcement partners are in huge favor of that either. And so that's concerning that that is sort of the policy change. On the funding side, we're facing major, major challenges. So on the federal level, you know, one of the main funding sources that goes towards homelessness, typically it's a 2-year cycle. The administration has recently said that it's going to be a 1-year cycle, which will have communities across the country scrambling to get their applications in. And there's real evidence that they're going to make it extremely difficult for California in particular to even qualify.
Right.
On the state level, the major state funding source for homelessness has been cut in half in the next 2 years. And then you see locally many cities having to tighten their budgets in every category, including homelessness.
Wow.
And so, unless we can identify, private donations and other sustainable funding sources, and unless, politicians can really try to prioritize this issue. I do predict 2 years from now, those gains that I mentioned will be reversed, and people will start to see more of their neighbors outside. And that's
it. Right. That's unfortunate.
Yeah,
it certainly is. Now, with 45 different agencies that you interface and coordinate with, I'm sure that means you have a lot of programs that Home First implements and manages. But I just want to talk about a couple of them today because we don't have time in our short time here. The Rapid Rehousing Program in Sonoma Valley. Can you tell listeners a bit about the program and how they might get involved?
Yeah, so we have a new program. You mentioned the Rapid Rehousing Program. That's a partnership between Home First and the Sonoma County Department of Health Services. so this is a really cool program that partners with landlords to house people experiencing homelessness in Sonoma Valley in market rate rental units. In our first year, we're hoping to place around 13 households, which translates to 20 people. And remember, there's only about 100 people actually experiencing homelessness in Sonoma Valley, so that's a big chunk. And so what we do is we help people find apartments, we fill out rental applications, we provide rental assistance for a year to 2 years, depending on their needs, and then pretty intensive case management to help them stabilize in that housing.
Right.
And so we're looking for people who want to be a part of this, in particular landlords in Sonoma Valley who are interested in renting units to people experiencing homelessness, again, with that intensive support we would provide. We're also offering landlords monetary incentives of $1,000. We'll pay you cash to jump into this effort. And then we also provide tenant mediation and payment for unexpected property damage if that occurs.
Wow.
And so just the message is that landlords can really step in to create healthy neighborhoods and impact lives.
Sure. That's definitely where it could go. So that's good news. The other program is outreach. I have to believe you've got teams that go out to encampments and, to connect with those people and to provide resources. Can you talk a little bit more about outreach and how the program works?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, street outreach is a hugely critical part of the system overall. So what outreach does is we connect people to critical resources like health, mental health benefits. We're distributing essential supplies like food and water. Advocating for them in the justice system and building trust, for people that have often had a lot of trauma and sort of divorced themselves from the system. And then ultimately, we have a housing plan for every single person we're working with, and we're working relentlessly to get them into housing. So we have three outreach teams across the county. We have a Petaluma team. We have a Sonoma Valley specific team that's a partnership with another organization named SAVES. And so listeners may see them out and about, in their neighborhoods. And then we also have a countywide team who sort of floats and fills in gaps across the county where other service providers aren't able to fully help out. An example of that is listeners may be familiar with when Social Advocates for Youth closed last year. And so our team jumped in and helped many of those youth remain connected to the system. In Sonoma Valley, our outreach team, 88% of them finished the program in either shelter or permanent housing. 40% went directly from the streets to permanent housing.
Wow.
So it's pretty successful. And it really gives me hope that, we, with the appropriate resources, this is a crisis that we can resolve.
Right. So it's a matter of being able to scale. But as you said, the funding challenge is about to get even tougher than it has been in the past. So anything that people can do may be a big help at this point. Talk a little bit about Home First's work to prevent people from becoming homeless in the first place.
Yeah, that's the other end of it, right? Is that we have to prevent that flow into homelessness in order to really address this crisis. And so countywide, last year, a new program launched called Keep People Housed. That's a collaboration between several different providers and funded by several city governments in the county. And it's a program designed to keep people who are at risk of homelessness from entering homelessness. It offers financial assistance, like help with rent, utilities, connection to services, and then case management to help folks get out of whatever crisis started out in the first place. So Home First is the Sonoma Valley operator for that system. Last year, we served 45 individuals. 100% of them who completed the program have remained housed.
Wow. That's fantastic. Your results are stellar. So, right. So, you know, you must be the envy of a lot of other organizations that maybe don't have those kind of success rates that are out there. But I imagine you all face the same challenges of funding, and coordination all require a great deal of effort. To get them all to come about in your favor. It's really something to be able to do that. We have a little bit of time left, and I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot. And I was just wondering if you had any case study or two that you wanted to share with listeners that give them a little bit more of a personal sense of, you know, maybe a caseworker told you about one of their clients who, you know, had been on the streets for some time and had a lot of success helping them with some upward mobility. Does anything come to mind that you'd like to share with listeners?
Well, we have our first person that we housed through our Sonoma Valley Rapid Rehousing Program recently. And, you know, we'll see how they do, right? Mm-hmm. They were recently housed, but it's a family. It's mm-hmm. It's a father and his kids, and then his mother, who were he was on the streets mm-hmm. in Sonoma Valley, and then moved to shelter, and was connected to our rapid rehousing program, and we worked with them to identify a market rate unit. And you know, initially there's always sort of ups and downs with these things, right? And so, I think it's important to be honest that like there was some initial, the landlord and him were learning how to live together. Right. And so we provided some mediation, right.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, things are going really well since then. They've resolved some of those initial concerns, and now he's working on getting a job, right, and increasing his income. Kids are you know, able to get to school on time, and so that's just such a important story of like a multi-generational household even who's impacted by this crisis and by housing affordability issues.
Yeah. That's a great example, and it's wonderful that you were able to get a family put back together, quite literally, all under the same roof. If listeners have questions, maybe they know somebody who's in real housing uncertainty situation, or they would like to help. How do they connect with Home First? What's the best first steps?
Yeah, so there's a number they can call. It's 707-277-1407. I'll mention that again in a sec. There's also an email, ce@homefirstscc.org. We also have an upcoming volunteer opportunity on October 25th from 11 to 12:30 at the Sonoma Community Center. Volunteers, we're having a kit build. So these are kits that our outreach teams go out with and help develop relationships. They have hygiene supplies, and so people can come and help us build them, and that's really exciting. And so We're encouraging people to bring items on the day of to include in the kits or purchase items through our Amazon wish list. And if they want to get more information on that, or again, they, you know, somebody needs services, I'll name the number again. It's 707-277-1407.
That's fantastic. And again, for the website, because I think the Amazon wish list is also linked on the website, homefirstscc.org is how to find Home First. Of course, you can just Google Home First as well, or Home First in Sonoma, and that'll provide you some links. Hunter, thank you so much for filling us in on the state of homelessness, and congratulations on the big improvements over the last year. Fingers crossed, we hope this trend will continue for you.
Exactly. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks. Bye-bye, Hunter. Sure. All right, listeners, we're going to take a quick little break, and we're going to come back with Anna Manwaring and her new book, Kickback, right after this.
You've been listening to The Morning Show, sponsored by
Highway 12 Winery. More information, 707-938-8815. Or at highway12winery.com.
The Red Grape, located at 529 First Street West, across from the Plaza in Sonoma.
Unicom Tax Services, located at 755 Broadway.
The Sonoma Valley Visitors Bureau. For more information, visit sonomavalley.com or call 707-996-1090.
Sebastiani Theater on the Sonoma Plaza, offering live shows and event rentals. More at sebastianitheater.com.
Programming for KSVY is brought to you in part by The Schoen Group, located in beautiful downtown Sonoma. SchoenGroup.com. This health moment is brought to you in part by Sonoma Valley Hospital.
Learning to flip your thoughts can have a profound impact on your health and well-being. The simplest way is through a positive affirmation that flips the thought from a negative to a positive. For example, when faced with chores, instead of saying, "I don't want to clean the house," say, "I like living in a clean house." When getting up the motivation to exercise, instead of saying, "I'm too tired to exercise today," say, "I feel more alert and energetic when I exercise." Positive affirmations help us change our negative attitudes into positive ones.
Sonoma Home Winemakers presents Free Movie Night, celebrating 40 years of home winemaking and helping home winemakers with a night out on them. Open to everyone, and the featured film will be Tiny Vineyards, a fun, funny, and accurate documentary that follows Sonoma Valley hobby winemakers through a winemaking season, a celebration of locals and their enological obsession, all happening at the Sebastiani Theater on Thursday, October 23rd. Doors open at 6 p.m., movie starts at 7, with plenty of homemade wine available. The event is free, but you must RSVP at sonomahomewine.org. Get your tickets, first come, first serve, till sold out, so act fast. A free movie night out from the Sonoma Home Winemakers, Tiny Vineyards, sponsored by Sebastiani Theater and Tiny Vineyards Wine Company.
And now back to The Morning Show.
Gonged back in again, 9:23. I'm Marcia Montgomery, your host, until 10 o'clock this morning, not too far away. And we are welcoming to the show Anna Manwaring. She's the author of Kickback, the very first Daphne Olaberrieta Mexico mystery. It's a fast-moving thriller about kidnapping, political corruption, and a woman who just won't back down. You might know Anna from Jadan. There you go. All right, I wasn't sure, and I was trying not to get it wrong. The Jadan Stone Mexico Adventures, and of course her memoir recently was out a while back. I can't even remember now how far back, but you will fill me in all of that. Kickback, by the way, was just long-listed for the Chanticleer CIBA. So, Anna, welcome to The Morning Show. Good to have you back here again.
Thank you. It's a real treat. I'm glad to see you.
So, it's been a while since you've been here, and I've been really looking forward to talking with you about Kickback. It's the first book of a whole series, although I'm not sure how many, but you're going to fill me in on this. Tell us a little bit about Kickback, how it came to you, and you went, ah, I have this idea, the first scene that I want to put together and what I want to share with this whole series. How did that come about for you?
Actually, Jaden, confusing my characters.
It's okay.
Olabarrieta showed up in book 3, I believe, of the Jaden Stone series. And she clamored in my ear for two more books until she got her own. Daphne is, she's the daughter of a real estate empire. The empire was begun in the 1800s. In the 1800s, Mexico City, early 1800s, Mexico City was just a tiny pueblo.
Yeah.
And Spaniards, wealthy Spaniards, started moving there and buying up the land. And her family, Olabarrieta, is actually a name that comes from that period. I did some research.
Oh, wow.
And they started buying up land, and this family has become one of the largest real estate development companies in Mexico, in Mexico City, and state of Mexico. Mexico City is two parts, by the way. It's the federal district, and it's the city in the state of Mexico. It takes approximately 2 hours on a good light traffic day to cross the city.
It's huge.
It's huge. So this organization, builds hotels and high rises and resorts and houses and
yes.
Everything. Now, what does this have to do with kidnapping? Daphne, just a step back. Daphne married the brother of Jaden's boyfriend she met in book 3. So it's the same universe.
Yep.
12 years later.
Yeah.
And when Daphne went to school in Britain, she's half British. Her father's British. She somehow got tapped to negotiate a hostage, a kidnapping situation, and she actually had some talent. So this is her avocation. She's the chief operating officer of her family business, but she does this side job. And the call comes. Now, how did I get this? besides the clamor in my ear.
Yes.
My husband and I went to Minneapolis for a sad reason, the memorial of his brother. And we sat next to somebody on the plane who I was certain was ill. And sure enough, 3 days later, Woody had COVID, and we were stuck in our Airbnb for a week, thinking, now, what's that drug you take to lower it?
Paxlovid.
Yes, Paxlovid, until we could leave. So I wasn't particularly sick, but I was contagious. So I spent my time on my laptop, and I read a really interesting article about a journalist in Mexico City who, true, who had been kidnapped and all her notes and her laptop and everything taken away from her. And she was threatened with death if she continued following a story about the government of the state of Mexico giving out false contracts to
whom?
It turns out the money, this is taxpayer money, mm-hmm. is being siphoned into a kind of a PAC to keep the PRI political party, which is the party that came out of the Mexican Revolution and had a stranglehold on the country for 78 years, to keep people in power. didn't work. But so there is this story. She turned it over to, I believe, The Guardian and a French nonprofit that looks into these kinds of stories because of the threats. So I ran with that. The person kidnapped is the journalist's daughter. And it's, help me, Daphne, you're the only one who can do it. But the problem is, Alba, the journalist, and the name Alba comes from a murdered journalist in the state of Veracruz.
Yeah.
You know, Mexico, they kill the journalists all the time. It's really awful. And I believe we're starting to see similar. I mean, we're arresting them here.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So Alba had been Daphne's best friend in college, but Alba hooked up with Daphne's boyfriend when Daphne went to California to go to grad school. So,
oops.
They haven't spoken. So it's, help me, Daphne. I haven't talked to you in 10 years, but you need to get my daughter back. And it goes from there.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell the whole story.
It's incredible. And I have to say, there's a lot of great detail, but the story is always moving. It's always moving, but you know, you have a great balance and conveying what's happening with story, setting the scene, providing more details about the characters, and then boom, you know, another plot action happens. And so there's, you know, we're always kind of getting a regular update, but who would have thought? Because she starts out just, you know, kind of getting ready to present her mom with a new development deal, you know, that she wants to pursue. And then all of a sudden, bam, drawn into this kidnapping mystery here that takes place. What do you think of your own experiences and from your past characters, you know, went into Daphne and her background and everything? You sounded as if like you were trying to say that Daphne kept, you know, gnawing at you after she was, you know, in the Jade Anne books. And she wanted more attention from you. As you fleshed her out, were there things that you were surprised that just kind of evolved?
Absolutely. Daphne was spunky, smart, and more adventurous than her family would like. to begin with, but she turned out to be incredibly intrepid. She just really doesn't back down. And she grapples. I had no idea about this. She grapples with starting a family. That's the subplot.
Yes.
She's approaching 40 now. And her husband is nagging her to have a child, and her mother, who's the chairman of the board and acts like she's running the company all the time.
she's a piece of work.
they're on her to put her nose to the grind, get a nanny and, you know, have the life. But we learn a lot more about her. She grew up, her mother was running this company. She didn't see her mother, her father, they divorced. Her father was back in England. The only time she was really happy was when she went to England and was a part of this family. He remarried. She's got lots of half brothers and sisters.
Right.
And it was a lonely life for her in Mexico. It was very elite, but lonely.
Yeah.
And I think that all these things help strengthen her resolve to actually make a difference. I don't think she thinks she's making that much of a difference in real estate.
Yeah.
In what she's doing. But that's the other subplot of this project she wants to do, which I'll tell you. So when I went to Mexico, this was almost 2 years ago, I went and we went to the very south of the city. It's been recently annexed into Mexico City, made possible by putting in the 12th metro line. Mm-hmm. You know, the transportation is important. And a lot of young people are moving down there. The climate's better. It's about an hour to get into the more business areas mm-hmm. on this metro line. And there's water down there. It's pretty. There are things. And I wanted this land she wants to develop to be in this area. It's called Tláhuac. And so we went down there. My friend and I mm-hmm. went down there and went to a party pavilion along this lake. And they had those flat bottom boats. They're called trajineros. And nobody wanted to take one, and they're expensive or a little bit. So we kind of waited around for people to come. And finally, there were two old ladies. I say old ladies. Turns out I was older than both of them. I went up and I said, well, okay, you want to split this? They said, yes. And so we got on this boat and we're going along this narrow, long lake. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the scenery. Oh, my God. I found the land. There it was. It just popped up. There it was. And what Daphne wants to do is build a green live work center that would have a grocery store, a school, yeah. A resort, other types of yeah. businesses.
Yeah, whole and community.
A whole community. And this is becoming, you know, more popular around the world. And she refuses to use I make a stab at Cemex, although Cemex, it's the biggest cement company in the world, and that company is owned by my first cousin's husband's family.
Got it. Got it.
And I made a stab at them, but actually they've developed a green cement now, or a sort of green cement. So, you know, I use books to make my comments about how the world's going. Wait till you hear about the next one. Ah,
my goodness. Well, that's a teaser that you're probably... We're going to hold that teaser there because, you know, that means another trip back to the KSVY microphone and all that.
I may be for January.
There you go. Now, you know, you were talking about going on a trip to Mexico City with your friend, but you didn't talk too much about, you know, the how, the where, the why. Your books are pretty much all focused in Mexico. You know, you have a certain background there. You should let listeners know what that is.
That's fun for me. All right. When I was in sixth grade here in California, I read a book, we all read a book, called Mexico, Our Neighbors to the South. And it had the stories of Popocatépetl and Ixtaccíhuatl, the mountains, the volcanoes, and it had the burros and the sombreros and the beautiful women in their lovely clothes that looked terrible on me. I definitely can't pull off the Frida Kahlo look. And I just fell in love with what I read. And then I went, when I graduated from college, I had a boyfriend from Idaho. We went to the University of Denver together.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, let's meet in, Nevada or Arizona or someplace and take my grandmother's camper and go to Mexico. We went to we went to Mazatlan for a month. And that was really fun, and I really enjoyed it. And then my first cousin married a Mexican and moved to Mexico City. So I had family there now, and I still have family there. She naturalized and has three daughters, and I think there are five grandchildren now. So, you know, I've had reasons to keep going, and I do keep going. And in 1991, I drove a VW pop-top camper that I had sort of customized to suit my needs. I drove down there with my dog and pretty much lived in Mexico for 3 years. So that was, you know, a lot to do with this. And that's when I met Fernando, who's my friend who lives in Veracruz now, who comes and meets me at the airport and drives me everywhere I want to go. Now, I can't wait to talk about this other book because of the totally bizarre things I've done.
Well, we will save that for January. We've been talking with Anna Manwaring. She is the author of the recently released Kickback, the very first Daphne Olabarrieta murder mystery series, Mexico mystery series. There you go. Yes, there's a lot of M's.
There's definitely murder, kidnapping, murder, government corruption. I mean, how can you go wrong?
There you go. Anna, thank you for your time this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Marcia. It's an honor to be here.
Great. I love having you here. We'll do it again when the next one's out. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And listeners, we'll take a quick break before we come back with Alicia Hunt right after this.
You've been listening to The Morning Show, sponsored by
Highway 12 Winery. More information, 707-938-8815 or at highway12winery.com.
The Red Grape, located at 529 First Street West, across from the Plaza in Sonoma.
Unicom Tax Services, located at 755 Broadway.
The Sonoma Valley Visitors Bureau. For more information, visit sonomavalley.com or call 707-996-1090.
Sebastiani Theater on the Sonoma Plaza, offering live shows and event rentals. More at SebastianiTheater.com.
Programming for KSVY is brought to you in part by The Schoen Group, located in beautiful downtown Sonoma. SchoenGroup.com. This health moment is brought to you in part by Sonoma Valley Hospital.
Your mother was right. Eat your vegetables. Fruits and vegetables are important to our health, and the growing season brings so many fresh varieties to enjoy. They can help reduce the risk of obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and some cancers. They also provide important vitamins, minerals, and fiber that keep our body healthy and strong. Try to include 2 servings of fruit and 3 servings of vegetables each day. A serving size is around 1/2 cup.
Somewhere in the mid-90s, a little Hollywood film production came to Sonoma, California and filmed one of the most iconic horror films of all time. This Halloween Eve, Thursday, October 30th, the Sonoma Community Center will show Scream. 1996 in Andrews Hall. This marks the second annual screening of the film, which featured the center as the setting for Woodsboro High School. A new partnership with Spring Hill Estate has made it possible to offer a limited number of fan experience upgrades with 2 levels, an afternoon at Stew's and overnight at Stew's. Both include limited edition and exclusive swag and a pre-show reception at Woodsboro High's classroom. For one night only, the Screams return to Woodsboro. This Halloween Eve, Thursday, October 30th, experience the iconic Scream like never before. Get tickets and find out more at SonomaCommunityCenter.org or call 707-933-4626.
And now back to The Morning Show.
The last gong of the morning for the morning show at 9:44. I'm Marcia Maycumber, your host for another 15 minutes. We're going to learn last and greatest guest of the day, of course. Alicia Hunt is here from Med Inc. Sonoma, which is really great. Alicia is the owner and a paramedical tattoo artist. And everybody's going to go, para what? They got para and they got tattoo. And the rest leaves them a little in the dust. First of all, good morning, Alicia. It's good to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. Okay, so explain to listeners who have never heard a job description, paramedical tattoo artist. What's it all about?
So it's pertaining to medical. So I specialize in compromised skin, restorative tattooing, post-surgical. I do scalp micropigmentation. I do treatments on scars. That's the big word pertaining to medical. Right. But if somebody has their belly button removed after weight loss surgery, I can create a belly button.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. Restorative for cancer survivors, nipple areola complex, you know, for breast cancer survivors, I can do areolas now officially.
Yay.
Certified.
Yeah. That's a big one. Reconstruction surgery, post-treatment reconstruction surgery has a few lacking elements to it, and that is where you can come in for anybody who's had breast cancer and is looking for restoring as much as possible. So exciting to hear that you now can do the areolas there. And I know there's other kinds of unusual things, like let's say somebody has a receding hairline, or maybe a hairline where somebody literally, you know, you might have had, you know, some sort of skull surgery or something like that. And so your hairline's gone kind of funky on you. That's also something you can tackle. Can you talk a little bit about that process and what it means to get that type of surgery? Tattooing?
Yeah, so on the scalp, there's different treatments that I can do. Mm-hmm. So I do see a lot of hair transplant scars or surgical scars, like you're talking about, facelift scars.
Right.
So
yeah.
Facelift scars are really common. And so what's happening is they have a scar either directly on their face or within the hairline.
Right.
And so when that happens, we tackle it depending on the scar. If we have a textural issue where the skin is very pronounced, uneven, we're gonna work on the texture. We're gonna soften it. We're gonna make it less tight. There was a hair graft tattoo I did. It's like from ear to ear, and as I was softening it, and it was so hard. I stopped for a second. I said, you know, this might be covered by insurance. I imagine. Well, first I said, do you get headaches? Because the tissue was so thick and so hard that, I mean, it was like drilling through it.
Oh, wow.
And you have to be, you know, you're only going so deep, but I'm realizing as I'm doing it how hard it is. And he says, yeah, I get headaches. And I said, you know, your insurance might cover this. Because I'm a national provider. I have a, you know, provider identification number. And so that helps it so that certain treatments are covered if, you know, deemed medically necessary. Right. And in cases like for breast cancer survivors, there's the Women's Health and Cancer Act 1998, which ensures like all women get restorative services and all stages of reconstruction. So that that includes their scar tissues. Their like, I want to see if I can battle to have like things like radiation markers, because I could turn those into freckles. I'll probably do it for free, but it's still pretty, you know, like, why not, right?
Right.
But my training was done with the Tata Foundation. They have their own academy, the Areola Training Academy.
Mm-hmm.
It's really rigorous. It was actually the most rigorous I could find. And they're based in the UK. And it was a dream for me to train with them. They've only been to stateside one time, and they were in Florida. And as I was finding a location, because
had some like wellness meetings in yes. Sonoma Valley. And during those meetings, like I never went out intending to do areolas because I was told there wasn't a need by the paramedical artist I found 4 years ago.
And
there was like one, there was one paramedical tattoo artist at the time, 4 years ago. I traveled three counties to find her and I knocked on her door and I said, you know, tell me everything, you know, this is what I want to do. And she said, forget about like scars and stretch marks, which she didn't know, but I was already working on those. And you know, I was working on learning about those. And then she said, forget about areolas, there's no need. So then fast forward to this wellness meeting, I'm sitting there and I think it was Terry from the Cancer Support Sonoma. Nice. She tells me there's absolutely a need. And so I kind of zoned in on it. And for the last year, that's all I focused on. And I'm, officially certified. I had my first, you know, actual, model, mm-hmm. which looks amazing. I can't show pictures on Instagram. They're kind of monitoring me very closely right now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard, you know, but my website has some, and on my Instagram, if you kind of look a little deep, you'll find them. They're kind of covered up, but you have to scroll and you'll find them. But anyways, I'm excited because the Areola Training Academy I did, based in the UK, was started by a survivor of breast cancer. And she started this foundation called the Tata Foundation. So their, you know, purpose is to ensure that survivors everywhere have access to this, regardless of their financial status, and they're trying to help people. Yeah, survivors everywhere. So they, so right before I kind of was working on settling on finding a trainer in looking in California, and I was about a week ready to kind of pull the trigger. They posted that they were coming to California. So I just take my money like I'm here. So I'm really happy to be working with them. I'm working towards being a sponsored artist by them. It requires extended training, mm-hmm. which I'm kind of very happy to do. And then if they accept me as a sponsored artist, then moving forward, I would have to host an annual fundraiser. Mm-hmm. And after Wig Out Sonoma, I volunteered for that. I kind of was like, how can I like be around these people, these like cancer supportive people? And they are just so amazing. I've been kind of bugging them. they said they had, you know, this event, Wig Out Sonoma. And I said, I want to help. How can I help? So I, you know, put on this bright orange wig and went down there and I loved it. It was really That's inspiring. Great. Yeah. And listening to the survivors, I'm really excited to help people in this community. And then I'll have to come up with my own fundraiser, which I'm already brainstorming on. I have some great ideas that I'm excited about.
That's very cool. Alicia, talk a little bit for people who had no idea that tattooing could be used for medical reasons, you know, and restorative reasons. So they're probably going, well, where are you? Mentioned, you know, some scars. You know, I imagine that there are some people who maybe have scars in really, you know, unusual areas or places where they're just like, I'm tired of the public questions about, oh, what did you have done or something like that, you know, because people will just not think about that and start asking about those things. Walk us quickly through like the, you know, the process, like you have some sort of preliminary, you know, consultation to ascertain what the needs are, timeline, all those things. What's the process?
Yeah. So I evaluate the scar tissue in person. If it's just an issue of the color, mm-hmm. then I'm going to be able to use a tattoo machine and tattoo needles to essentially color using skin colored ink, which I custom blend to their skin tone. So that's going to be the most basic scar camouflage. Mm-hmm. And that is, that's one of the simplest. Right. I say it's probably about 2 to 3 treatments, color adjusting, right. And, you know, just touch-ups, but right. It's mostly just done in one treatment. And then if you are somebody who has scars which are, you know, having a texture issue, then we're going to tattoo them. You're going to tattoo within the compromised area only, leaving the, you know, the healthy skin around it untouched. You're going to tattoo with a tattoo needle, tattoo machine, and it's like almost like micro needling. And then I have a medical grade serum that I can sometimes use, and there's different results with that. One, I can lighten the scar using that serum. Mm-hmm. And by doing that form of needling within that tissue, sometimes so collagen and elastin are released naturally. And another great benefit is melanin can react. And so there can be an improvement in the coloration from just your body working with the micro injuries that I'm creating.
Wow. Fascinating.
Yeah, that's going to be done in a series of 3 treatments, 4 or 6, maybe 6 weeks apart, 6 to 8, it depends. Right. But spaced out, you know, they can come every year and do the treatment. That's an amazing thing.
Wow.
And typically the first treatment is the most impactful. It's like shocking. Same with stretch marks. When I do stretch marks, the first treatment, they're like, I'm done, right? It's like, no, you got to come back. we can do better. It is a process. You see it through, and the end results are pretty amazing.
So, yeah. All right, listeners, we're just about out of time here, so I want you to know, Alicia's right here in Sonoma. Very conveniently located online. Find her at med-inc.com, you know, a little hyphen in the middle of medinc.com. You can always just Google MedInc Sonoma. She's on social media, as she mentioned. And do you want to give a telephone number in case somebody wants to call?
Yeah, my number is 707-287-6448.
There you go. All right, we got to
tell them where they can. Oh,
no, it's okay. All right, we got to wrap it up because Simon Says Sports is coming right up there. If you got questions for Alicia on how all of this is done, next steps, and you know, just trying to absorb all the information she shared, or if you're even a candidate based upon, you know, the funkiness of wherever maybe your scar is or what your need is, Alicia can help out. So thank you, Alicia. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks. Have a great week. All right.
You too.
All right, listeners. Thank you for tuning in this morning. Simon Says Sports is coming up in just a minute. Of course, I will be back here again next Monday morning, bright and early. Have a fantastic week, everybody. Bye-bye.
KSVY Sonoma.
Programming for KSVY is brought to you in part by
The Schoen Group, located in beautiful downtown Sonoma. The Schoen Group is affiliated with Sotheby's International Realty. Our goal is